Welcome to episode 38 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is June 10th, 2012. I am Matthew Furlough, and this is the other son of my father, James Furlough.
Oh yeah, that's me. Same dad.
Hey man, it's Father's Day. So, I got a quick question, James. Okay. There was a little bit of a news event this week.
Yeah.
And
Monday, maybe?
Monday morning, biggest company in the world made a couple announcements. Mm-hmm. We'll be talking about it a little in depth, but I want to get your opinion straight out the gate on the live blog feeds. How did you actually view the keynote?
So, I don't even know where my phone is. So, to be totally honest, I didn't get to read it live because my manager decided that that would be the perfect time to do a mid-year review.
Oh.
And so I was on the phone the entire time. Not the entire time, but by the time I got off the phone, like an hour later, and the time it took me to read and catch up, it was over. So it was fine for me. I didn't have any problems.
Interesting. Yeah, because I went I decided to – I usually have like three or four that I'm tracking on. Mm-hmm. And this year was like – this year was like the year of like the updated – live blog. They all had these like cool, crazy feeders that were going left, right, upside down, backwards, into the screen, out of the screen. Mm-hmm. Constantly updating and all sorts of streams and stuff. I thought it was pretty awful for the most part.
Wow.
TechCrunch. Theirs was pretty stable for the most part. That was the one I ended up going with. But the rest of them, like, they kept crashing on me and stuff.
Weird.
It was pretty frustrating. Yeah.
I've always been a fan of Engadget, but that's...
Engadget was terrible. Theirs was the worst.
Weird.
Yeah.
After the fact, it was just fine.
Yeah. I'll bet. But anyways, well, this week, like every week, we will be talking about technology in the continuing corporate opera. This is a great week for it. That is the soap opera of corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and the technology they are developing. Before we get into the heart of the show, James has got a short disclosure.
Yeah, so I work for Hewlett-Packard. However, I do not represent Hewlett-Packard's opinions during this show. And so I should always be saying, I think. And if I ever say, like, we think or something like that, I meant to say I.
Cool. All right. If you would like to follow us throughout the show or throughout the week, we got all sorts of places that you can go and check that out. You can follow my personal Twitter. My handle is at Matthew D. Furlough.
And I am at James Furlough.
Nice. The show's feed, because we've got one, is at Furlough Bros. Make announcements, schedule stuff, anything that's going on, that's where you're going to get that information. But you can also go to our Facebook page, you can go to our Google Plus page, and then the main hub of everything where all of the news is going down, this is the big one, check her out, furloughbros.com. That's the one to pay attention to. So,
and that has all historical shows, because I know that sometimes iTunes doesn't have all of them because it only caches so far. So.
Yeah, we're up to 40 episodes, despite this being the 38th. We've got two specials so far, so
yeah.
All of them are there. Check it out.
Yep, exactly. So we'll hold off on the big topic because that will that could consume 2 hours, I'm sure, and we'll try not to let it. but I wanted to start out with a certain cartoonist who is raising some money for charity because of a lawsuit.
I'm laughing at it just thinking about it.
So theoatmeal.com is a website of this guy who does cartoons. And if you don't follow him, start now.
What are you doing with your life?
it's okay. Warning right now, it's not always politically correct. No, it's not safe for work.
Right.
Oftentimes. Yeah. So, but it's funny. This guy's name who does it, his name is Matthew Inman, and he's funny. What can I say?
It's mostly coarse language, but it's...
But he does all sorts of commentary on things and keeps up with tech, and it's funny.
Yeah,
so, good old Matthew was going about his business when about a year ago, he noticed that a website called, what is it, Funny Junk, or is it Junk Funny? It's got to be
FunnyJunk.com.
Sounds about right. He noticed that they were, what happens is users submit funny junk to this website, and then they repost it, and then have ads all over the place. And pretty much every single one of his cartoons had been submitted and reposted. And so he wrote a comic, pretty much just calling him out and being like, hey, guys, quit stealing my stuff, okay? And if you're going to steal it, at least give me attribution, because they would literally erase, like, the oatmeal.com.
Yeah, the watermarks and stuff.
Yeah, and he was just like, that's, you know, whatever. You know, it's embeddable, but you got to, you know, give me attribution. And they weren't doing it. So he wrote this thing, and it was hilarious. And totally making fun of them and their business model and whatever, and just kind of let it go. Well, a year later, he gets a letter from a lawyer representing them that says, pretty much you have defamed funnyjunk.com because you are like number two or something like that when you search for Funny Junk.
I want to point out at this point that the reason he's number two is because of all the traffic that gets driven through his site by Reddit. Because Reddit is what's ironic is that in a lot of ways it's the exact same type of site, but the users of Reddit think, like, our content is so much better, we're so cool, that everybody's like, Funny Junk steals from Reddit, which is funny considering that there's, like, no original content on Reddit. but so this is sort of just, I just want to set that up as that's why there was so much traffic driven to the Oatmeal's criticism of Funny Junk.
Okay, so this lawyer basically says either pay, you've hurt the company and stuff like this, and you need to pay me or pay them $20,000, otherwise you're going to get sued, is basically what it comes down to. So good old Matthew does what he does, which is he talks to a lawyer and is pretty much like, do I need to listen to this and, you know, actually, you know, take it seriously? And lawyer's like, no. So he republishes this guy's letter and then continues to make comments throughout the entire thing. And you know, just basically making fun of this guy and like, are you joking me? Funny Junk, it was the one who reposted all of my stuff. P.S. Here's a long list of URLs of my cartoons that are still on your website as of right now. I mean,
right.
It's a long list. And and he's like, you know, what a crock. And he's like, and the reason why I'm number two is because of what you just stated, not because I'm some like SEO genius and I'm trying to get after him. He also the lawyer points out that like when you look at the source code of his web pages, there's like a pterodactyl.
It's a pterodactyl.
And he's like, it's in your code and it's definitely to make fun of Funny Junk. And he's like, no.
It's
on every single web page. It's a part of my code. And I made this cartoon before I wrote my thing. And furthermore, there was this song that was made about the pterodactyl, which I followed that comic. Wow. definitely a not safe for work cartoon.
Oh, man.
It's bad. But I mean, it's funny, but just like it's over the top.
Yeah.
So he's just like, no, this lawyer's wrong on so many levels. And so he gets to the end of it, and basically he goes, I've got a better idea. He goes, I'm going to try and raise the $20,000 that this lawyer was, you know, threatening him with, and says, but I'm going to do it for donations. And I'm going to take a photo of the raised money. He goes, and I'm going to mail you that photo along with this drawing of your mom seducing a Kodiak bear. Which is where I think he crossed the line of funny to, oh, wow.
Yeah.
And Then he goes, and then I'm going to take the money and donate one half to the National Wildlife Federation and the other half to the American Cancer Society. And it's called Operation Bear Love Good, Cancer Bad. And it's just, and this picture is, it's bad.
Yeah.
And so he's like, so that's what I'm going to do. And he opens up a donation thing.
Wait a second. Let me interject right here. That got posted to Reddit within like 20 minutes of it being posted to his site.
Yeah, totally. I mean, yeah, you know, as it should. So in this letter, this guy, he gives the lawyer's name. He crosses out his address and stuff, but I mean, come on. This is the internet, right? And so it's like within, what do you say, within an hour, he raised the $200,000. And last I read, he was over $100,000. I don't know where he's at right now.
It's like 170.
170?
Yeah,
that's pretty amazing. So I mean, so he's raising just a ridiculous amount of money, and so, oh, I love it. So now the lawyer, poor guy, he's like, everyone knows. So it gets posted on Reddit, and so this lawyer, people start looking up his name, and they start calling him and emailing him and harassing this guy. Just like, oh my gosh. And yeah. And so it's like, I'm trying to think where here we go. So they reached out to the Funky Junk's lawyer to discuss the situation. And he explained that he had to remove his contact information from his website due to the large number of people who contacted him after Inman's blog post went online. And the lawyer says, I really did not expect that he would marshal an army of people who would besiege my website and send me a string of obscene emails. He goes, I'm completely unfamiliar, really, with this style of responding to a legal threat. I've never really seen it before, he explains. I don't like seeing anyone referring to my mother as a sexual deviant, he added, referencing the drawing. And it's just hilarious. And so I forget what he used. Oh, he's trying to get the fundraiser thing canceled because he's doing it for the wrong reason or something.
And the website's already come back and said, no, we're not going to cancel a $170,000
donation and publicity.
Yeah, because the best part about it is like if you look at like the other top things on their on that page, they're all like these like horrible fundraising, like, you know, I'm trying to raise money for this really like stupid thing or like this really like untoward thing. So they finally have this massive publicity
yeah.
thing, and it's like for this great cause. They're like, no, we're not gonna take this down. Are you stupid? Guy just is like, dang it. But oh man.
Yeah. So and I guess this lawyer now has interpreted his blog post as similar to a DMCA takedown, and so all the content has been taken down on Funny Junk, you know, as it should be from, you know, originally. And he's like, oh, there you go. Yeah, I just love this lawyer. He goes, I don't think that what I did was unreasonable. He tells me that while the situation is unique, he's typically open to negotiation. So that was, they were just trying to make money, I think. And
yeah,
this just totally blew up on his face.
Yeah, which is, you know, good, because it's that sort of, you know, there's a fine line between getting reparations for some sort of injustice versus extortion, and I definitely think...
Well, what's the injustice? That's the funny part, right? Funny right. Junk totally started it, and now it's just hilarious. I love this lawyer, too, at the end. It's an education in the power of mob psychology and the internet. And you're like, no, not really. I mean, the internet is actually pretty darn smart. And yeah. When they see some sort of injustice going on like this, they'll rally. I mean,
that's part of what's so fun is, you know, it's the you know, they call it the hive mind, but it's, you know, it's you're poking a bee's nest a lot of times, and that's exactly what this guy was doing. He's just poking a prod, and then, you know, and the internet got upset. one of the people they're fond of was being attacked, you know, and. So they came back. Yeah, you know, it's one of those things. And one of the nice parts about Inman is that he's, you know, he's very articulate and he's able to express the situation well. So, he, you know, you don't feel like there's, you know, obviously he didn't encourage anybody to attack this guy, but you know, everything that he was doing, you don't feel like you're getting lied to or whatever. You know, he, you know, and eventually the letter that they, the actual legal response they sent back, because his lawyer sent an actual response, and it tore Funny Junk pretty good. It was a pretty solid argument for why it was ridiculous, and you know, and I've heard a lot of people say that they're pretty lucky that he doesn't want to push it further. He just wants to make comics and move on with his life. He just wants to end it, because if he didn't want to end it, he'd actually have a pretty strong countersuit. So
I bet,
you know, it's they're lucky that this is all that's happening to them. But good times.
Pretty hilarious. Just classic. Wow. Here you got a cartoonist, and he's just making the best of it.
Yeah, he's a funny dude. But. Later in the week, after a lot of the other exciting things had died down, a document got leaked, a Microsoft document detailing what will become the Xbox 720. That is the next generation Xbox that I said wasn't coming just a few weeks ago. So David Perry was right, everybody. I kind of doubted it, but it appears that we got something pretty solid. Looks pretty cool. Actually, it was the document was removed per the request of one of Microsoft's legal firms, so it appears it was actually a legitimate document. It outlined a bunch of the things that they were looking for in the next Xbox. They are talking about six times the performance, having eight or six cores. They're having, you know, forward verse compatibility with Xbox, with what's currently going on the Xbox 360.
That'd be good.
Blu-ray support, 1080p display output, 3D glasses support built in, and they're also talking about the .NET virtual machine integration. So all of the programs that are going to be written for your phone, written for your for your computer, it'd be easier to move them back and forth. So just sort of an overall integration between all these different platforms, what they can do and how they do it for you. But what they stated, one of their big things is they want to be the only box in the living room. So, you know, this is definitely, you know, we talked about this a little bit a few weeks ago, but this idea that, you know, I'll talk about the Apple TV and the iTV and the Google TV. Sometimes we forget about the Xbox, and it sounds like the 720, which I think is an awful name, by the way, is going to be their, you know, obviously this is where they're going, but it's going to be, from a hardware perspective, it's going to be dedicated to this end thing. And there was even talk about some sort of like a crazy heads-up display, 3D, crazy graph, or crazy glasses, mm-hmm. and also a Kinect 2 with better sensors and up to four-person support. So I would say nothing really radical in this thing. The only radical thing is, you know, is that it's what you might expect just from where they were coming, and, you know, that this is, you know, there's going to be a next generation. One of the things that I thought was really interesting is that they said they wanted to have a 10-year life cycle. They want it to be at a place where 10 years after it's launched, they'll be coming out with a new one, which, you know, obviously the 360 is at a very long life cycle, and that's something that they want to extend even further.
So how do you think it'll compare against the Wii U?
You know, content is king, but hey, without the content, if it were just system to system, I think it would kick the Wii U's butt. In a, you know, just overall performance, it's not, you know, at this point I haven't, you know, with the Wii U, I'm excited to see what they do with it, but I haven't seen anything that just like, oh, I need to get this. Whereas, you know, at this point, you know, Microsoft's goal of becoming the Omnibox is they're, you know, they're really going to town with it. And it seems like that's the direction they're going. And I personally think that the Kinect is got a lot of potential. I continue to think it's got a lot of potential. It just hasn't been acted on. as well as I would like yet. And it looks like this Kinect 2 is they're going to go even further down the direction of making it better. And so I think overall, you know, if this is what's going to come, I'm pretty excited about what it'll eventually look like. And I think it'll work well for Microsoft. You know, looks like a pretty powerful little machine.
So. Yeah, I wonder how much it'll cost.
They said $299 in this document was their goal.
That's reasonable.
Which is, yeah, it's not bad at all for, you know, a complete system. And one thing that I should probably point out was the timestamp on this document.
Yeah.
So it is from 2010. That is one thing that's definitely. It makes people question, but what's really interesting about it is that even though this is a 2-year-old document, things like 1080p, full integration, 3D integration coming, those are all things that they've been working towards with the Xbox 360, and just sort of this idea that, yeah, there's nothing, you know, especially even 2 years ago, you know, the idea of bringing .NET into the framework, .NET wasn't outwardly as big a part of their strategy. I think 2 years ago they knew it was, but now it's just like they're out and proud, yeah, we're bringing .NET to everything. And we want, you know, we want programs to be able to transverse between platforms really easily. And it just seems to me that this is an authentic document. And to me, it tells me that this was probably, you know, a mid-level strategy piece where it's like, you know, the real strategy guy said, this is what we want to do, this is how we're going to do it, and they were disseminating that out to their engineer forces to move forward on that. So I think it seems pretty legit, and I think it seems like, you know, this probably is what we should expect. And 2013 was the goal year, which seems to line up with everybody's expectations of when they'll come out with the next Xbox. So it seems to me that this is what it is. This is the real deal.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'll know next year.
Yeah, really. But, yeah.
So, all right. Time to stop putting this off.
I know, yeah. Okay, let me just...
So, here's the question. How much do you think... No, the number you want to keep in mind here is 3,749.
Okay.
$3,749 will get you...
A car.
A very cheap car, but yes, it could get you a car. But it will also get you a computer that has a 2.7 gigahertz quad-core i7 with 16 gigabytes of RAM.
All right.
And a 768 gigabyte flash hard drive. Oh, yeah. Nice. And a Retina display. It does not come with an optical drive. Side note. That is how much the new MacBook Pro with Retina display fully loaded will cost. $3,749. So did you already order yours? You got it? You're good to go?
No, but they're already sold out, so that's, there's that.
Maybe probably not the fully loaded, but you know, some version of it. I also saw this funny picture where so they had it like sitting in a glass tube. I don't know if you saw that picture.
Yeah, I did.
And it's in there, someone took a picture of that, and then you can see everyone else all around it taking pictures of it with their cameras. And I mean, it's unbelievable. And then underneath it, they took the scene from 2001 Space Odyssey of the monkeys touching the obelisk. You know, they're all hovering around it.
Yeah.
They're all touching. Oh, it's just like, you know, is someone suggesting we're one step away from murder? I love it.
Right. Well, it's funny. That came on Reddit, and people were really criticizing, like, this is totally messed up. It's just a laptop. And then, like, the top 5 posts were pictures, or, like, comments on the post were pictures of other releases of products like cars and, you know, like motorcycles and stuff like that, where there's tons of people, you know, cameramen and stuff taking pictures. And they're like, how is this any different? Except for the fact that it's a bigger company and a bigger deal than the rest of these, because it's going to make more money than all these different companies. You're like, yeah, it's probably, I know it looks a little grotesque, but it's probably justified, because it just, you know, it's about these people's jobs to take pictures and cover these stories. Like, you can't criticize them too bad. But
yeah.
But that's still, I'm sorry. $37.49, that's ridiculous. That just, I can't even.
Well, the base price is different, right? It's not. I don't even remember what the intro.
It's like $2,500.
$2,400.
And that's like, you know, i5, 4 gigs of RAM, and like a 256 hard. I mean, it's like, it's you know, it's
Not. It's 22.
It's 22.
It's only
is the base.
22. That's it.
Yeah, jeez. You know, I read a couple interesting articles talking about this, because yeah, me too. one of the big things that they talk to, so one of the things I thought was interesting, and I want to remind everybody of the fact that, what did we say for our New Year's show? We predicted that they were going to move in the direction of the MacBook Airs. They were going to go solid-state drives. They were going to get rid of the optical drives. And boom, here we have the first in the lineup. I think one of the things that they probably ran into is cost manufacturing issues, because obviously they only have one of these super laptops. They kept around the other 15 and the 13. And what I read, and I buy into this theory, is that the reason why they got rid of the 17-inch Pro isn't because they don't want to have the 17-inch Pro anymore. People said that, like, well, sales are kind of low on it. And you sit there and you go, like, compared to the Mac Pro? Because the Mac Pro gets, like, no sales, and they keep that thing around year after year. So that doesn't really make any sense. And what it came down to is they wanted the Retina display computer to be their flagship computer, but all along the 17 has been their flagship computer. So it's like they'd have these two conflicting, well, what is actually the best top-of-your-line computer? And this was their way of kind of clarifying the field and saying, no, the 15-inch Retina is our top of field. And what that means is when manufacturing probably gets to 17-inch screens, they'll bring back a 17-inch laptop. So if that's what you're waiting for, just, you know, hold your breath a little bit longer. We're almost through. There's all sorts of talks about how long that could take. That's the predominant theory that I've read on that one. I buy it. Looks pretty cool, though. I mean,
have you had an opportunity to go to a store and look at it?
I haven't, sort of. It was one of those things where I've been pretty busy this week. I probably could have made it.
What? Oh, there's a huge feedback thing, but go ahead.
I probably could have gone at some point. I probably should have gone, but I didn't.
From what I hear, it's similar to the Retina display, where once you see it, it destroys. I'm looking at my monitor now going, can I see the pixels? It kind of destroys the view. Hey, speaking of view, people want to know, what's up? Why are you not in the storage room anymore?
Did you grab
a cupboard closet?
For the week. Actually, next week I'll be here as well. This is, I am living with my cousin for the next 2 weeks. He's an 18-year-old young man who, his parents are on vacation, and they left him home alone once, and it'll only be once. So I get to. It's pretty close to where I work, so it's I'm just crashing. Yeah, it's actually works out well, but I'm just crashing for a couple of weeks. And his parents are out of town, making sure he doesn't destroy the place.
That's cool. They give you a food budget, or are you kind of on your own for that?
They gave him a food budget that I can kind of mooch off, but. The truth is that I pay for my own food anyway, so it's not that big of a radical change for me. I'll survive somehow.
That's cool.
The gas, it's nice to not have to spend as much on gas, though. That's the real perk for me.
Yeah. All right, cool. So there's your answer.
Yeah.
You are babysitting. Hopefully, he doesn't listen to this.
Oh, what's really great is the rest, or not the rest, but a few other members of our family do. So it'll probably get back to him one way or another.
Cool. Perfect. So, all right. So they had a computer, which, you know, I'm not going to get ever. I'm pretty sure by the time I'm in the computer market, that one will be old school again. And, you know, so there's that. Cool. Awesome. Now, there were a couple other things that I actually will get because I already own a computer, you know, a Mac. There's, what is it, Mountain Lion, which my wife thinks is a horrible name relative to Lion. She's like, lions are so much cooler. Why Mountain Lion? I was like, I'm sorry. That's what they do.
Sort of, I was going to say, it's sort of, they came out with Lion because it was Steve Jobs' last OS and he knew it. And then they kind of like ran out of big cats.
Yeah, we'll see what happens next. It'll be the trapper.
Yeah.
The real king of the jungle. Yeah, so, and then the other one is iOS 6, which I feel like we kind of already knew a lot about that, given rumors and stuff. So I guess, you know, of all of those, you know, what would you like? You know, what were you like, this is cool, I wish I had an iPhone, or I wish I had a Mac so I could take advantage of this?
All of it, really. there's a lot of little things that, you know, that really kind of caught my eye, and I definitely, on more than one occasion, because I ended up watching the whole keynote, on more than one occasion during that section, I actually thought to myself, man, I think this is the year I gotta figure out how to do it. Like, I really gotta put some effort behind it and figure out my finances and figure out how to get an iPhone because I'm excited. you know, because yeah, it's pretty awesome. But I think one of the big topics for us, and you know, I keep telling everybody, you know, people I guess were disappointed, but. You know, when people ask me, well, were you disappointed? I'm like, no, not at all. I thought it was awesome. Like, what do you think was awesome about it? I was like, well, it's like the greatest thing that could have happened for us happened. Google, like, threw, or Apple threw down the gauntlet at Google's feet and said, it's on like Donkey Kong. and they did that in a couple ways. You know, the big one that everybody kind of knew was coming, obviously, was Google Maps. What do you think of Google Maps, or not Google Maps, jeez, was the Maps app, which, yeah, what do you think of it?
So, it's a Maps app. You know, for me, there's a couple things that it has to get right. First, it has to give good directions, which is harder to do than it sounds. And then the other one is like, I just wanted to give me the directions before I hit the turn. So, was I talking to you last week about this with Waze and how it does?
Was
it? Yeah, and it's just like, I don't want it to, you know, for me to throw on my blinker and then it'd be like, turn right. Like, great, thanks. I already know that. I'm here. And Waze is notorious for that. And I don't know. I think that... you know, as long as it tells me a little bit before I have to do the turn, you know, that would be cool. I've seen one review of it, and they were just like, we've got to play around it for a little bit, and they're like, it's good. It works.
Right. You know, yeah. Yeah.
It's a map app, you know. It's one of those where, for me, what it sounded like is they are continuing to close loose ends and loops on this device. In some crazy way, they're already maturing.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like, man, the hardware is pretty standard. I'm sure they'll come out with something amazing, right? Let's just start inflating expectations now. Something amazing for the next phone that'll just really rock Google's world, and they won't know what to do with it. I'm sure that's going to happen. But, you know, positive. Just wait for it. You know, buy stock in anticipation of that happening type of thing. I know. I think they may add one or two new tricks to the phone, but I don't think it's anything revolutionary. I think it'll just be, you know, this continuing to add features and, you know, refinements to something that's already good. I mean, like one little one that they didn't talk about, but I saw it on the screen real quick. And honestly, that would be the one where someone to take a screenshot and just look at that one where they list all the things. Because, like, one of them was, what was it? Like, for your ringtones, you can now pick songs from your library.
Nice.
Cool. One of those you couldn't do before, and I had a special app on my Mac to make it happen, and, you know, it's kind of like, all right, cool, it's built in, as it should be.
Right.
You know, so, I don't know, little things like that. You're like, all right, that's cool.
Yeah, and I you know, I got the, you know, for me, one of the big things that I kind of took away from it is it's like, you know, from an end user perspective, it's not that big of a deal. It's like you said, as long as it works, it's not a big deal. You know, the concern is that their search algorithm for finding locations, you know, finding your closest Starbucks,
yeah,
that would be bad, or that the, you know, the actual turn-by-turn navigation, that doesn't work right. But it sounds like, you know, Apple, one of the things that Apple has gotten really good at is partnering with other people that already do stuff well. It's like they get all of their, you know, as much as they got rid of Google, by getting rid of Google, they brought, like, four other companies into the fold. Like, all of the crowdsourced data, I guess, is coming from Waze. Mm-hmm. Is what,
which
the,
is
what
a
they're
little
talking about.
Disconcerting.
Yeah.
But the
yeah,
directions are coming from TomTom, so that's...
Right, but I was going to say, but TomTom's doing all the directions, all of your reviews are from Yelp. You know, it's just
well,
like...
Well, I did think that was funny about the Maps thing, where, you know, they were like, oh, they just killed TomTom and all these other things. They're like, Waze is done for with traffic alerts, and then... You know, it was like hours later. No, actually, they're the ones powering this entire thing.
Right.
Oh,
yeah.
They're not dead. Amazing.
Yeah, I guess Garmin is kind of out in the.
Yeah.
They're the one
yeah.
that everyone's like. But I think Garmin, you know, as much as we'd like to think that the phone will replace all of your GPS
life
stuff. And I think it will. There's still a lot of people who go out and buy them anyways, and you know, they at least have a few more years of people who decide who want a second redundant system that'll go for it for whatever reason they like, you know, another GPS. So I don't think Garmin's in any real trouble, and obviously TomTom and Waze aren't in any trouble either. They'll just get a boom from this. So you know. But the big deal to me and the exciting part is obviously Google gonna, because this isn't, no, obviously this isn't their main cash stream, but this is one of their cash streams. It's the biggest, you know, between iPad, iPhone, and iPod Touch, it's the biggest platform, single platform in the world. It outnumbers Android when you include all iOS Maps stuff,
right.
And all of a sudden that's gone. It's like, that's a big deal.
Well, and I guess according to some developers that they talked to, because you're like, so how hard is this going to be to switch? And they're like, honestly, Apple, the APIs are exactly the same. It'll just go, it'll go from one map to another one. They're like, minimal, almost nothing will be required from us. You're like, whoa.
Yeah, cool. Apple did it right, man. One of the big things is that when you start to realize is that it's like, you know, they had been working, you know, Google wasn't, because when the phone first came out, I thought it was actually like, when they said it's powered by Google Maps, they implied that it was Google Maps.
Yeah.
Whereas the truth is it's not. It's just the Google Maps server.
API,
you know,
yeah.
You know, and so they know what all the APIs are already. They knew everything. And so, yeah, they just went in and were like, yeah, we'll make it real painless for everybody to get on board with this new system. And like, you know, we keep saying, you know, as long as it works, it's going to be fine. And, you know, it doesn't mean that, you know, Apple's not invulnerable to, you know, flops, but usually, you know, it's like, usually there's some huge flaw, obvious flaw when they're going to have a flop like Ping, where it was like, the obvious thing that Ping needed was Facebook integration, and it didn't have it.
Yeah.
It was just like, you know, big surprise that it died. You know, MobileMe, you know, a couple times, the struggles that MobileMe has had, it's always been, you know, it needs to be tight, it needs to be simple, it needs to be integrated. And when it finally became iCloud, well, okay, now it works. You know,
they didn't talk much about that, did they? Not that I'm
iCloud?
Did they? They may have mentioned
it,
but...
They mentioned it like every third sentence, but it was always, and now it works with iCloud, and now right. iCloud is doing this, iCloud is doing that. It wasn't like last year where iCloud was this big thing, but it's like everything syncs.
It's literally hovering iCloud. There like a cloud.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's how they want it. I think they want you to have that name, the brand in the back of your mind, but they don't want to throw it in your face either because it's supposed to work in the background. Or above your head, out of view, whatever.
Yeah.
But one of the big things I noticed that, and I thought this was kind of interesting, is that it's not just you and I that are saying, well, as long as Apple does the maps right, it'll be fine. But it's like everybody. And I really feel like there was a time and place where the idea of not going with Google's Maps app was just like hilarious. Like, really? You're not going to go with the best maps, and like 5 years ago, that was the case. It's interesting to me that it's like now that's, obviously Microsoft kind of set the stage for that idea in a lot of ways that somebody else could do a maps app well.
Have you ever used Bing Maps?
Yeah, I have. It's one of those things where it's not, MapQuest to me is kind of like your lowest common denominator and always gets the butt of all my jokes and whatnot. But to me, it's like, Bing Map is, it works fine. It does the nuts and bolts of it fine. It's nothing exceptionally special. It was no reason for me to get used to typing in Bing over Google. And the other nice part about, Google Maps is it's synced with all of the rest of my Google universe. So it's, I just kind of stuck with, but there was no reason, I guess what my point was is that there wasn't any really super compelling reason for me to not stick with Google,
Yeah. So speaking of which, I'm going to total tangent Bing rant right now. You can search for images within Bing, just like Google.
Right. Okay,
which I often search for images, and in this case, I was using Bing for whatever I was doing, and oftentimes I find a picture, and then I like to click the Find Similar Sizes button to try to find a bigger version of it, because I'm like, I could always shrink it down later. I want it as big as possible.
Right.
With Google Image Search, it gives it to you largest to smallest. Makes sense. Bing Search, not the case. I honestly cannot figure out their rationale. It seems random to me.
And
it kills me because you're like, because I'll scroll and go, oh, here's a big one. Here's a big one. Why are you not at the top? It's the exact same picture as that one. Get up to the top. Oh, it drove me crazy. And here's the other thing, too. There'd be a couple times where the one I had originally selected was actually the biggest size. There wasn't a bigger one there. And I was like, well, let me use that one. No, you can't select that picture anymore. Sorry, it's gone. We're just going to show you similar ones. Sorry. That's it.
What?
I'm like, really? Whereas on Google Images, the very first one, upper left, is the original one, the original source. You're like, all right. Well, no. They have it separated as the original one and then everything else below. But whatever. So just Microsoft, please fix Bing. Image search. It's broken, just so you know.
That one's an easy one. You can get on that.
Yeah, it's a sort filter. You can do it. It's easy. Well, rant over.
Yeah, it's jeez. They get so close so often. You're just like, what is wrong?
Well, it's got to be the little things like that, right? That's why they don't have the market share that Google has. Just those tiny imperceptible things that you just go, no, it's not as good. They didn't pay attention to the details or whatever. Reason, I don't know. Why would you not sort your images by size? I go smallest to largest. I don't care. At least there's a rationale there. Alphabetical?
I was gonna hold this one. I was gonna hold this one back a little bit. You know what? We'll come back around to the Microsoft rants later.
Okay.
We'll come back around because I had another Microsoft rant that I wanted to go into, but we'll come back on that one. The other big thing that I think Google should be a little bit irritated by is the deep Facebook and Twitter integration.
Ah, and yes.
You know, and I mean, and it is deep integration. Like, they did not hold back.
I'll be honest, it's almost annoyingly deep.
Yeah.
Because it's like you're just buttons on your notification bar, buttons anytime you look at a picture, buttons anytime you have a message. It's just like, come on, guys. Is there a way to turn this one off? I mean, I won't, but come on. My wife will. She doesn't want to see Twitter everywhere.
Well, all you have to do, I thought as long as you don't sign in, it doesn't show up. Oh,
okay, maybe. Hopefully.
Yeah, it's because to me, it's like, you know, Twitter to me is, as I haven't found it intrusive at all, and I don't really use it, though. It's just kind of funny. But I like the fact that it's there. I think one of the big things, but oh my gosh, I texted you Monday morning because I was so proud of myself about last week, my thought that, you know, you may ask the question of why doesn't Apple make it easy to sort what people like by what your friends like. You know, I'm looking for an app, what do my friends like? And, you know, obviously Facebook came out with their big thing, and I was sitting there and I went, well, maybe Apple's just like their strategies, we'll just let Facebook take care of it. And then they announced their whole, and now you can like it in the Facebook store or in the App Store. And so you can get all, you know, Facebook's going to get all this information and tell you what your friends like. And I was like, yes. Man, I am like, oh, I could work for Apple.
Genius. I love it. But no, you can't, because then we couldn't talk about anything.
That's, you know what, that's a really good point.
Yeah, see, you are choosing not to work for Apple for the sake of the podcast. I appreciate that.
Amen. You know, that's my pleasure.
I'm pretty certain you would not be allowed to do this.
No. Oh my gosh. I don't think any disclosure would get us through the on the air.
We'd have one show. Make it count.
Yeah.
No, actually, then you could have all sorts of shows afterwards when you get fired. So it's
that's
good.
True. I have to disguise my voice and stuff.
Yeah, so that was cool. We'll see the integration. Yeah, but I think it was interesting how they were even like, you can tweet from, or you can post status updates from all the popular services. You can get maps from us, and you can post videos to places like Vimeo. It's like, nice.
Yeah.
That's the thermonuclear war right there.
Yeah. It's funny. Yeah, that is the last one that's really, you know, the last of your home screen. I didn't even think about it, but that is the last of your home screen that they haven't quite gotten you to off of, or, you know, they haven't quite figured out how to...
There really is no alternative. I mean...
That's the problem.
Which, you know,
yeah.
We all... What was it? 5 years ago, we were saying maps, there's no alternative. You know, maybe maybe Hulu will get into the self-hosted game or something.
Yeah, I don't know. And the nice part about it for Apple is that, like, I'm always surprised how few people realize that YouTube is a Google-owned enterprise. Like, and I think because it's branded separately so well, I think it's actually one of those ones that Apple might just let that one hang around because they're like, you know, they'll throw in those shots at, like, yeah, you know, you can upload or Vimeo, you know, but at the same time, they won't get rid of YouTube just because it's like nobody thinks of YouTube as a Google, you know, very few people think of YouTube as and Google as synonymous.
And let's be honest, I mean, their search bar is still Google, and
right.
You know, because it's the best. And YouTube's the best and the most popular, and you know talk about it, but they're going to use it. I mean, they have to. That would be
right.
That would be ridiculous. Could you imagine the outcry if they were like, "Oh yeah, no more YouTube. We pulled the support for that." You're like, no.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
They might want to kill the video app all on its own and integrate it into something else. That would be interesting.
iCloud. Have iCloud be handle their thing, but
well, in the sense that like you go to their movie app and there's a YouTube button and you can search for stuff inside of there. You know, it doesn't have its own dedicated thing or something.
Or have YouTube not be one of your home screen.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. It's a separate download.
Yeah, it's a separate because it's like they're not getting rid of Google Plus for they're not stopping Google from my big thing in the, you know, it's like,
well, I bet that's an Apple made app too. That's not a Google made app, if I had to guess.
That's true. But I my thought was it's definitely an Apple made app. They're just pulling on the API. But my thought was, you know, I got the feeling that it's like there's this table, right? The king's table, as it were, you know, and at the king's table, all of the.
Is this table round by any chance?
It might be.
Okay.
It's a round home button. It's a click wheel table.
It's a click wheel table. There it is.
And all the king's servants come and they
and
serve
the king's
you food
men.
And they do all the work for you and you just have to eat. You just show up with your money bags and you're the king's friend.
Okay.
And then there's like the rest of the thing, which is like, you know, the rest of it where it's just people milling about in the king's hall and they're not at the king's table. And I think Google is like, they keep getting pushed further and further and further from the king. You know, until you just get kicked, you know, completely to this, relegated to this third, you know, like anybody else, you know, they're no different than Zynga, you know, and I think that that's where, I think that that's what Apple is trying to do to them, and I think, you know, it's not like they're trying to get them off of the iPhone, they're just not going to rely on them as a source of information, and they're not going to give them the perks of, you know, of having the keys to the kingdom, as it were. So, you know, it just is and the real bad news that I keep coming back to is, like, this seems like it shouldn't be that big of a deal, except that it's the most prevalent platform in the world. You know, it's just, you know, a mobile platform, I should say. I suppose there's probably more copies of XP out there.
Probably.
But you know, but it's, you know, it's a big deal for Google. It's not a non-issue. It's a, you know, that now they have to compete against all your other third-party, you know, apps, and all they have is their brand. They don't have an automatic seat, which I think is, you know, bad for them. But yeah,
that'd be
the other big, yeah, I think so, but I don't know.
All right, other big thing. What do you got?
So, you texted me earlier this week, and I had been already thinking about it, and I just kind of wanted to mull it over and before I made my absolute declaration. Apple came out with another app. It's called Passbook. I keep thinking Passport, but that's not what it is. It's your Passbook, and it has all of your, like, passport information, all of your, you know, all of your, like, tickets, and for, like, plane tickets and movie tickets, and gift cards and all sorts of stuff, all beautifully integrated into the lock screen. And they also dropped another bomb. They have 400,000 active credit card numbers.
That's
accounts.
A lot.
Yeah, and PayPal has 260 registered, but only 100,000 active. So basically, Apple has 400,000 or four times the, you know, number of purchasers as PayPal. So they're huge. They're behemoth. And the question everybody keeps asking is, you know, when are they going to have their quote unquote iWallet solution? You know, and mm-hmm. they're, and you know, you threw this out there and I was already thinking it, but I wasn't sure. I think it's obvious that the Passbook is going to become the eventual iWallet. It'll have your credit cards in it with all your passport information, because that's what it is.
Your passport information? Did you mean to
say
that?
Not your... No, I didn't mean that.
Okay.
But I mean, all of your, you know, it'll have, it's, you know, it's what it looks like is it's actually like designed to look like a wallet, like just in how.
Yeah, and then I think iPhone 5, you get NFC and you go boom, link it to a credit card, you're good to go.
This is what I'm gonna say. I don't think so.
Or
I don't
PayPass
even think they're gonna have,
or whatever. What's that thing?
I don't.
Credit cards use?
I don't. Wait a second.
MasterCard.
Wait a second. Yeah. This is what I think is going to happen.
Okay.
I think they have all the credit card information. I think they now have the app. And one of the, you know, one of the thing that I've been talking about all along is keep an eye out for the app that doesn't make any sense without a new piece of hardware, because that's going to be, or, you know, something new.
This is
some
it.
New paradigm. I think this is it. I think this is obviously it. I think this is the thing that they introduce, give everybody kind of 3 months to sit on it, to gestate on what this could be. Kind of, but yet really kind of hold back. And I think what you're going to find is that come September, you've got your app that handles all of that different stuff. You've got all of the credit card information. And the only real thing that you need is some sort of a security, super encrypted, near field, really quick connecting antenna that can connect, that's, that's easy to develop and cheap and affordable, and you want to have a huge user base so that companies are willing to invest in it. The iPhone 4, the iPhone 4S, and the iPhone 5 will all have Bluetooth 4.0 chips in the phone. They're super encrypted. They're short field, short range. They connect really quickly. They've already got, it'll come with the app. It'll come with all of your credit card information already activated. I think what they're going
to
do come...
Wait, so how does Bluetooth connect to, you know, I go to Home Depot and I buy way too much stuff. How do I use that?
I think what they're going to do is they're going to have it be... I don't think that there is an NFC solution out there. That the biggest problem is that there's no infrastructure in the, you know, even with like the NFC readers, like almost no retailers actually have that. So people have to go out there and buy or invest in, you know, big retailers have to invest in some sort of a communication system. And what Apple's going to tell them is, don't do it with an NFC reader. Don't do it with that smart sense chip that MasterCard has. Do it with Bluetooth 4.0.
I use as frequently as possible, just for the record.
Oh, nice. I've used it when I had it. It's cool. But it's, you know, but I think
every single time
they're
like, whoa, I've never seen anyone use that before. That's how that works. Like, yep,
really?
I'm that guy. I have a podcast. It's about tech.
Yeah. It's about tech. Check it out. I can't do it online. I got a Visa. Stupid Visa. But I think what's, you know, my MasterCard doesn't want that anymore. I just think it's one of those things where it's like, what you're going to have is they're just going to drop this bomb of the technology is there. The user base is there. If you build it, they will use it.
If you
know,
build it,
and,
they will use it.
Yeah. And I think that's what they're going to tell, you know, and what they're going to do is they're going to get Walmart or Target or one of the big ones to agree to be integrated. Best Buy, yeah. And it's just going to be like this torrent of, oh my gosh, this is so obvious. You know, because they need to give those companies a reason to invest in it. And I think what the thing is that what they've been doing is over the last 3 years, they've been building a gargantuan user base, quote, slowly, quietly, and subtly, and it's there. And it's just this, there's this behemoth waiting to be dropped. And if they don't do it that way, like, really, really, what are you guys thinking? Like, this is, like, if that's not what they do, it's either going to absolutely blow my mind, which I seriously doubt, or it's just going to be the dumbest solution, and it won't work. Because it's definitely, you know, which comes first, the electric stations or the electric car? The electric car, you know, they go together. You know, you can't, mm-hmm. you know, that's always the problem with infrastructure type questions is if you don't have a user base, why invest in the infrastructure? Well, you got the user base, so it's your turn. You know, and I think that they can, now they'll have the supplies to actually, you know, push it. And I think that's what's going to come. I think that's what that's all about. I think that's the inevitable, eventual conclusion of what they're going for. You know? But only September will tell.
Yeah, we'll see. I just want to get iOS 6. I'll be good. I'm gonna spend the $20 to upgrade to Mountain Lion too. Just for the record.
Duly noted.
That was a good price.
That's the
one. Of course, they had me at however much it was, $30 last time. Or wait, what was it? Is that
it's
right?
$30.
Yeah. Yeah, they had me there. So.
I know. I bought like 3 copies of it.
Yeah. Cool.
For the Macs that I don't own.
It happens. All right, man. Any other Apple WWDC / keynote things before we...
Yes. Yeah, I got one. Well, yeah, let me, I'll drop this last one on you. It's
all right.
Real quickly. So another interesting thing about the MacBook Pro, definitely has been decided to be the least serviceable laptop ever.
Surprise.
And it's basically all of the hardware is soldered together. So nothing comes apart. Even the RAM is soldered on, which everyone's like, that is totally messed up because that is easily the most overpriced part of the website, the blog that I get some of my news from, Yeah, they're Mac fans, and even they're like, the one of their mottos is "Friends don't let friends buy RAM from Apple," you know, because it's just it's so overpriced. And but now they're making it so that you don't have a choice. But it's one of those things where it's like,
cool.
I wrote the description. Yeah, exactly. that was probably one of his last gifts to the company. This is a good idea. Basically to me with the new MacBook Pro is it's a super high powered clamshelled iPad. That's, you know, it's no different. They learned how to build an iPad.
Refreshed and reloaded. Didn't you watch
That's right.
Whatever. There was the video.
Yeah, I did watch
Johnny
the
Ive was like, it's amazing. If you let go of the past, you can really move on to the future, which they were talking about the disk drive, but, you know, whatever. And it's like, there was this one cartoon I saw earlier today where it was like, actually, it's still a laptop. It's just with a higher screen, no drive, and it's faster.
Yeah.
It feels like it's still a laptop. You still do the exact same thing.
The serviceability of it is one of those ones that they're one of those classic, one of those old-fashioned ideas that they're letting go of as well. But it's, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, one of the funny things I thought about the keynote was you made the comment how Tim Cook is not a fan of the superlatives.
Yeah.
And there were just as many amazings. In fact, like, even Tim Cook wasn't like, it's magical and it's, like, wonderful and it's amazing, but he was definitely like, it's gorgeous and, you know, amazing and really beautiful. And, like, you're just like, he's using different words, but they're just as overblown. So, like, they're just, like, where did Steve Jobs go? It's like, he's still here. But he's, you know, they did him proud. It's very much a Jobsian perspective. It's hard to say it's Jobsian because I think it's as much Johnny Ives as it was Jobs, you know. And I guess what I should say now from now on is this smells of Johnny Ives. It's just like
smells of Johnny
Ives. You know, his whole, you know, super elegant, super super beautiful. Everything's soldered together, and most importantly, now they are the biggest resellers of, you know, RAM and flash memory. You know, that's where they make a huge amount of their healthy profit is in selling you crazy overpriced basic components. But, you know, it is what it is. It's, you know,
so
you get the most advanced laptop in the world for it.
Before we move on,
yeah.
You can't hear it, but my dog is actually whimpering in the background, and I want to find out why.
Okay.
Slightly concerned. So take a break, entertain the viewers, you know, do what you got to do. I'll be right back, all right?
All right, man. Hey, everybody. This is kind of weird, so I've never had to just talk at the audience. Okay, whew, I'm kind of nervous now. James is going to come back, and he's going to listen to this later, and I fear he's going to laugh at me. So, man, it didn't give me any time to... Sorry, guys. Oh, so this is one of the big things that came out of iOS. It's kind of talking to you. It sounds like... Oh, he's back. Okay, good. He just was missing you, his buddy.
I guess. I don't know. So he'll hang out here.
Dude, I'm going to really have to work on the solo show because that was the most awkward 30 seconds of airtime. Like, I was just like, I didn't even know what to talk about.
Sorry, I sprung it on you too. I just...
No, it's all right. It just...
He was literally sitting there whimpering. I was like, oh, man.
Yeah, I understand.
I hope that's not what he normally does when we leave, because my wife is away, or, you know, she left at the same time that I locked myself in here. So, man, if he normally just whimpers for us, I don't know how I'm going to feel.
Well, he probably, it's probably just you, because he could smell you. He's like, James is here, and he's ignoring me. Yeah. Sorry about that.
He wasn't near the door. He was somewhere else. But anyways, let's talk about Twitter for a bit here. Okay.
All right.
So they came out with something new on their blog. They're calling it new. It's an expansion of what they already do. It's called Expanded Tweets. So the idea is you see a tweet with a link. It's got like from the New York Times. It's got the title and then a URL. And typically, if you want to know more about it, you have to click the URL to learn more about it, right? 140 characters, you know the game.
Yeah.
They're going to be doing pretty much what Facebook does now, where you can make your comment, you add the link, and then it expands it to then give the title of the page along with a real quick synopsis, blurb, plus a picture if it's got one. But you can only do this if you're part of the select few. You know, we're talking about the round table from earlier. Twitter is starting to make their own. So like the Wall Street Journal, Breaking News, Time, the New York Times, the San Francisco Chronicle, and Der Spiegel Online.
How do we get into – I want to be part of the round table. Is it too late?
It's too late. Other ones for like photos will be WWE, BuzzFeed, and TMZ.
Wait, the World Wrestling Entertainment
Enterprise
or the World?
WWE. It's the wrestling one.
So it's not the Wildlife Foundation?
No.
Okay, all right. I can never remember which one's which.
BET Awards, I think, is going to be another one. So the idea is if you're a news article, you'll get, you know, it'll expand to show that little snippet. If it's a photo, it will expand to show this photo. If it's a video, it'll expand to show the video is kind of what it is. And it's basically it shows you more snippets, which is interesting. And the way that they're pitching it is, you know, it's hard to compete in a stream of tweets where you only get 140 characters. So for these selected publishers, basically, we're giving you a little bit more real estate in which to, you know, attract eyeballs and visitors. It's interesting. There was this one article. They were like, it's kind of a double-edged sword in the sense that, cool, you got more eyeballs now. You know, like this example of CNET. I wonder if it'll only work for. Okay, see, I don't know this now. Okay, so like, if I were to do like a CNET article in this example, like I did it, would it then expand it for, you know, because it's with them as opposed to. It'll only do it when CNET does it. It's got to be. Even if I post it, it'll expand it for me, right? I think it's rolling out slowly or something. So I don't know if I can test it right now. But the idea, we'll assume that it's the other one where if I do one of the special URLs, it'll expand it for me.
I'm assuming that's what it's gonna be.
That would make the most sense, I guess. You know, the idea is, hey, cool, you got more eyeballs now. Congratulations, because we expanded it for you. You got a little more exposure in the stream. On the other hand, though, it also means, cool, I got the snippet. No need to leave Twitter now. I can keep going with my stream.
Yeah. Well, I don't know how true that is. I mean, I definitely feel. I think it'd help. I think it would help because in Facebook, I'm more inclined to click on the links, and then as soon as it makes me go through one of those stupid hoops that it doesn't just forward me to the article. That's where I get lost, and I just like, okay, never mind. But as long as there's actually an article there with a little bit of information, I might be more inclined, especially with the you know, shortened links, because they, you know, it can be so hard to tell what it is about, you know, because it's like you've only now got like 100 characters. So it's like with our podcast, like I got like 6 words to try to like convince you to click on the link. You know, it would be really nice if we could expand it so we could actually tell you what the show is about. I could see. And then, you know, obviously with a show like ours, there's a lot more content. It's not like you're getting the whole article. I could see how, like, you know, the impetus is upon those websites to have interesting information and intriguing blurbs. You know, if you don't have good articles, then it doesn't matter how big your blurb is.
Right.
People aren't going to go. But if you've got a good stuff, people will click through your blurb. You know, I think is what it comes down to. I don't think that that's going to hurt them long term.
Okay, that's fair. Content wins.
Yeah.
That should be the name of our podcast, really. Content wins.
Yeah.
It's true. All right, all right, all right. Fair enough. Just want to get your feedback on that one, see what you thought about it. I like it.
I just want to figure out how to get Frillo Bros into that group.
Dude, good luck with that. You're near San Francisco. Make a visit to the office and get on your knees and plead.
Actually,
guys, please, let us in. There's a table. They'd be like, what are you talking about?
The table. The round table. You Sir Lancelot. Google, let us in. I'm trying to think. I actually might have a friend who's working for Twitter. I'm trying to remember. Maybe he was a former Twitter employee. That'd be an interesting conversation to have.
That'd be kind of cool, actually. The other thing that they were saying is that it could potentially be used for their promoted tweets and stuff, where, you know.
That's what I was thinking.
You pay money, we'll expand it for you. Don't worry about it.
That's what, to me, that was where I thought it was going to go. I expected it to be like, yeah, sure, we'll expand it for you. $7 million. Dang it. Will you take installments?
Will you take installments? I have 20 bucks.
Yeah, exactly.
What did that get me? Yeah. Oh, man. Totally. So, you want to know why... Or how do I, no, that was a horrible intro. Okay. What makes the opera of corporate so awesome is that there's constant change and turnover and, you know, cross-pollination. And I also think the reason, you know, there's a big reason why some companies will be dominant for a while and then not so much after a while. reason... or I should say, a great example of that is from Bret Taylor, who is leaving Facebook, and he used to be their chief technology officer.
All right.
And he's going to some other new startup. You know, clearly stayed around for a while, helped Facebook grow. He's getting his payoff, his IPO, and now he's going to go start up his own thing. And this happens a lot with tech companies. You know, it's the curse and blessing of going public, I think. But it's also, you know, they make it a point in the article to go, no, we got a deep bench. You know, there's a lot of things there. I mean, Apple was like that the entire time, right? It's more than just Steve. It's more than just Johnny. You know, there's more. Well, but
I think the argument was it's more than just Steve. It's Johnny. Well,
right. But make this point. But at the same time, you're like, dude, no, you were the CTO. I don't understand. if there's so many other great people, why were you in charge?
Right.
You know, so I just like, it's just interesting to me, you know, it's cool. And it sounds like he's the first of what will probably be a few, to leave, and not because Facebook's bad. It's just like, dude, we just made millions of dollars. I'm going to go do my own thing. You know,
yeah.
I've got hopes, dreams, and aspirations, and I want to try to do it. And he says, you know, I was up front with Mark, that he eventually wanted to do another startup, and, you know, Facebook's not really a startup anymore. And he goes, now is the good time. Right after the IPO, we launched a few things and we're ready to go. Just kind of, you know, one of those, all right, man, see you later.
It would be interesting. I don't know much about this guy, but it's, you know, I think there's definitely like, there's definitely a sense of, or the question I would have to ask is like, what was Bret Taylor really good at? Was he really good at understanding technology and how to get people to work together? Or was he the kind of guy who had a real vision of what the technology should be? Or
so it says here, he previously worked at Google. And then he left and started FriendFeed, which then got bought by Facebook, which is why he's there now.
Right.
So, it sounds like he's probably good at leading and coming up with a vision.
Yeah.
Sounds like he's a startup guy, honestly, is what it sounds like. And,
right.
And he just is looking for the startup buzz.
Well, the reason why I was going to, you know, I ask is it's like, I think clearly it's like, you know, I make that joke about it's not Steve, it's Johnny Ives, but I think in a lot of ways it's like Johnny Ives has been the vision behind some of the best-selling, you know, consumer devices ever made, you know, and it's his art, you know, is what it is, and mm-hmm. He just connected with Steve, and Steve probably influenced him a lot, but ultimately it was Johnny Ives designing it. You know, it's like, whereas I think, you know, Tim Cook is obviously great at some amazing things, but I think without Tim Cook, I still think you'd have some great products because you have, that's me. Sorry.
Well,
sorry. I don't even know how to, I don't know what this is.
Once again, friendly reminder. Matthew is at someone's house babysitting, and which is why A, he's not in the storage closet, and B, why random phones are ringing.
Hopefully they don't call back. I didn't even realize there was a phone there until...
That's awesome.
Know. Yeah.
Dude, geez. Landlines, what are those?
I know, seriously. I silenced all my devices.
I know. I don't even know where mine is. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Somewhere.
Yeah. But, you know...
You had a thought, and I'm sure it was amazing.
What I was going to say is, you know, whereas the question here that I would have for Brett Taylor, the CTO of Facebook, is he like Johnny Ives or is he like Tim Cook? Tim Cook, obviously, Facebook couldn't be the, or Apple couldn't be the behemoth company that it is without Tim Cook, but they would still make great products, you know, whereas if you switch that, I still think, you know, it's definitely, it'll be interesting to pay attention to the technology that they're delivering and, you know, and the changes that they've made. Because I've long made the argument that the reason why Facebook is not MySpace is because it's more than a social network. It's a technology company. It's a company that develops a lot of different powerful types of technology that, you know, do all sorts of different stuff. So if that suddenly changes or ends, then we know what company to pay attention to next, and it's whichever one Brett Taylor starts.
So just so you know, the commenters corrected you. It's not behemoth, it's behemoth.
Behemoth?
Yeah, there you go. You got it. I was totally listening to what you said, too. I don't know what he is. Facebook will be fine.
Facebook will be fine, yeah. I think so. I actually buy the argument that they have a deep bench. I don't think it's a one-man show, but...
Mm-hmm. You know. It's just Mark just smoking and coding in the back room. I could see it.
Smoking and coding.
Well, yeah, it's Jurassic Park, right? This little website can be run with three people in this room. Hold on to your butts.
And then he gets eaten by raptors.
I may or may not have watched that last week, and it was awesome.
It's a great movie. Oh my gosh. It's still, even 20 years later.
What? That was not 20 years ago.
Yes, it was. Yeah, it was. It was definitely like 92.
Really?
Yep. I was like 5.
How old am I?
I don't know. 28?
Really? Yeah, I guess it was.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. Okay.
It's crazy. Dude, that movie is old. It's unbelievable how well it stood up, considering how old it is. Now it's a real testament to that, to the special effects. And
it's got a little bit of cheese to it. I'll be awesome, but I'll also be honest. it's got a little bit of cheese, but
yeah, it's but not it's bad. Still. You know what the coolest thing is? This is totally off topic, but I really love this. Is when they start the descent onto the island and it's all bumpy and he's trying to put his seatbelt together. What does he do? He grabs two female seatbelts and finds a way to make it work. And later in the movie,
oh my gosh, really? Was that on purpose?
Yeah, that was on purpose. That was a total, you know, yeah. That's what that's about. That's why they put that in there. It's, you know, two females. They'll figure out a way. Life will find a way.
Oh, wow. I'm too dense to pick that kind of thing up. That's awesome. So you always learn something new on the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Tell your friends.
Yeah. It's cool.
That is cool. My mouse just died. That's awesome. So hopefully it doesn't fall asleep or anything. So I'm pretty flexible at this point since my mouse doesn't work. We can talk about whatever you want.
Sweet. That's what I like. So less than a year. In less than a year, this is just, this kind of just goes back to what we keep saying this, we keep talking about it, but Sony finally did the calculation. Verizon has gone from $30 for unlimited data less than a year ago, and now they're at $50 per gigabyte is what their current going rate is.
What?
It's for new data plans. It's ridiculous. So this whole, you know, we keep talking about it, and
Had the family shared plans. That's including that?
You're going to make me open this article. Hopefully it doesn't crash
the internet. I would myself, but...
It's shared data. It's because of the shared data. Huh. It's like 1 gigabyte for $50. It's crazy.
Why would you ever do that?
Because there's no other options. Everybody keeps whining about the fact that it was, you know, now people are saying, they're thinking that it's a bait and switch, that they had this long-term goal of, no, we'll give them these really cheap data prices, and then, like, you know, after, like, they're totally hooked, we'll totally jack prices up. But I actually, you know, I'm a big fan of the don't attribute to malice, which would, with that which could otherwise be attributed to incompetence. I really do think it was just... I don't think they're evil. I do think they just didn't realize what they were getting themselves into, and I think the iPhone really caught them off. It comes down to the fact that Verizon didn't want the iPhone because they couldn't control the data. You know, they couldn't control the flow of it, and you know, Apple wanted too much of a say in what people did with their phones.
You get unlimited minutes, unlimited messages. My mouse is working again. I got new batteries.
Yay.
And
1 gigabyte.
So, okay,
data.
So let me think. What am I? Actually, that's not bad. That's reasonable. And they add, $40 for access on a smartphone?
Yeah.
Okay, that makes the math a little harder to do. Tablets are only $10? Oh, man. I would bite on that one pretty easily for $10.
Yeah.
Per month? Eh, I don't know.
No.
Because I'm trying to think. So we have... Okay. So quick math here. We have, what, 5 lines on ours?
You do? Yeah, we do.
Which means we do. So we're paying $40 just for the extra lines on the phones, 3 of which are smartphones. And then... And I think our total cost, well, there's the HP discount in there, which kind of throws things off a bit. Okay, so let's see. We had 3 smartphones, so that'd be $120.
Yeah, and then 2 dumb phones, which is another $60, so we're at $180.
And then let's see here. And I think what we're currently using is, everyone's on all 3 of us are on a 2-gig plan, so we're at the $60. Let's just say we all share 6 gigs.
Whoa. Okay, so that'd be another $80 on top of the $180.
Yeah.
So you'd be at $360 a month.
That's a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
See, it's that monthly line access. That's the killer right there. That's the trick. Because if that were like the regular $10, you know, like it normally is, that would be reasonably priced. But that's where they kill you.
Yeah, I think it just comes down to, you know, I really think they just totally judged it wrong. They just didn't, you know.
Well, they're not idiots. I mean, they get it. There's a definite trend away from talking to, to using data.
Yeah, data is data, as is said. You know, people use
That's interesting. It's a little. All right. 50 gigs, $50 per gig. I mean, it's a little misleading, but it's definitely more expensive. That's for sure.
Yeah. It's more expensive, but. Jeez. Yeah, because I guess it's $50 for 1 gig and unlimited texting and phones, but.
Yeah, but it's that monthly line access. That's the killer. Yeah. I do like that you could put tablets on there.
Yeah, yeah. You know, they're trying to figure out a balance. They're trying to figure out a way to, you know, do what they're doing.
We'll see what'll happen here is AT&T will come out and they'll copy them to some degree. They might price it a little more or a little less, we'll see, and then Verizon will respond in kind and, you know, we'll
go back and forth.
Yeah, yeah, we'll see. Actually, I like the idea of family plans, but that's because, like I said, we have five lines. All five right. lines. And I got a Chromebook, so, you know, I could.
I still hate the fact that you have that Chromebook.
Yeah, well, you know. So tell me about Kogan.
So this is awesome. Kogan.com, they do cool electronic stuff, TVs, electronic stuff. There you go. Kogan is a what's the word I'm looking for? Consumer electronics company. And basically, what they said was, look, if you're going to come to our website using IE7, we're going to add an extra 6.8% onto everything you buy. We're going to tax you an extra 6.8%. And basically, what their argument
That's awesome.
Was is. Yeah, basically what their argument is, and it's not a big surprise, is it's that, you know, IE7 was released 6 years ago. It's a super old technology, and they're looking at these people going, just upgrade your browser. And they think, what they said is they go, it's not just that it's a headache for developers. It costs us a tremendous amount of money to pay those web
totally.
Developers to do all of these really high-end modern things, and then try to figure out how to make it work on an old one. So it's a worse experience, it's a headache, and it costs a ton. And then they actually threw it. And then on top of that, they throw us some statistics about how, like, it's, you know, and how much it costs the world, you know, to continue to support IE7. So basically, they were like, we're going to do our own little part.
That's awesome.
And what happens is when you first go there, if you're using IE7, or earlier, when you go there, the first thing that happens is there's a pop-up that comes up and just warns you, look, you can surf using IE7, but it's going to be an impaired version of the website, and we're gonna charge you extra. All you have to do is click on one of these links and upgrade to a modern browser, and then we won't do that.
Wow.
So that's, yeah, pretty awesome. Like, yeah. That's my strategy for life. I definitely, I'm a really big fan of websites that don't let Microsoft get away with having old, super old, dumb versions of IE out in the wild.
I pretty much just stopped looking at those sites and don't worry about it. And,
yep.
You know, I go, if someone complains, I'll just ask what browser, and that's when I will tell them.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. That's
if it works, you got lucky. Or
yeah,
I got lucky,
yeah.
I guess.
Right, right. Really. Well, the thing that gets me is that it's, you know, like we said last week, it's not just IE7. But IE7 is definitely the worst offender that's really still, you know, used prevalently.
Mm. Yeah. That's cool. All right.
Yeah.
That's
but,
funny.
Man,
we're doing
that
part.
Was awesome. Yeah, we're trying to change the world, man.
Hey, you know, that's the way you incentivize people. Well, or you give everyone else a discount, however that works.
Yeah.
You're supposed to do positive behavioral reinforcement. That's what my teacher of a wife tells me.
Mm.
So this next one, I'm going to admit, has not much to do with tech. Other than the fact that it's in the scientific, it's on the Ars Technica site, which is, it's close. And it's hilarious, so I'm going to share it anyways, and this is my podcast, so I can do it. Our podcast, sorry. So, economists, another reason why I love it, because I'm an economist, and they demonstrate exactly why bank robbery is a bad idea. Leave it to the econs. What they found was, so there are some banks that were in the UK that were trying to decide if they should take some extra security measures to, like, beef up the security at their bank branches.
Yeah.
And so in the process, these professors, they did an analysis to look into the economics of bank robbery from a thieves' perspective. Okay.
Because why not?
Exactly. So for guidance on the appropriateness of knocking over a bank, the authors first suggested that a would-be robber might check with a vicar or a police officer. But for the statistics, look no further. We can help. We can tell you exactly why robbing banks is a bad idea. The basic problem, this is awesome, is that the average haul from a bank job for the 3-year period that they were looking at, I guess, it was only about, they use, £20,000, which comes out to about $31,000. And it gets worse. The average robbery involved 1.6 thieves. So the authors conclude that the return of an average bank robbery is, frankly, rubbish. It is not unimaginable wealth. It's a very modest £12,000 per person per raid.
Jeez.
And they sit there and go, yeah. What are you doing, man? You got, like, holding something out, or...
All right. I was scratching my scratched my arm, and
what was that? So they go on further. Given that the average UK, okay, so modest return, £12,000. Okay, given that the average UK wage for those in full time employment is around £26,000, a bank robbery heist will give him a modern lifestyle for no more than 6 months. And so if a robber keeps hitting banks at a rate sufficient to maintain that modest lifestyle, in other words, every 6 months, by a year and a half into their career, odds are better than not they'll have been caught. As a profitable occupation, bank robbery leaves a lot to be desired. It gets better. The success of a robbery was a bit like winning the lottery, as a standard deviation on that £20,000 was £53,000. So that means that some robbers did fare better than average, but it also means that fully a third of robberies failed miserably. And they go, okay, for this point, you guys are doing math. £53,000 is bigger than £20,000, okay? And it's like, and just in case... You're thinking that the UK is a... Oh, yeah. Also, in case you think the UK is a poor location for the bank robbery, think again. The FBI figures, they determine that the average state's heist is only $4,000.
Whoa.
So, there was a point to me talking about the math being... the deviation's bigger than the actual average, but we'll get there. They do say that there are ways to increase your chance of getting a larger haul. Every extra member of the gang raises the expected value of the robbery proceeds by about £9,000 on average, other things being equal. And if you brandish some firearms, that will add another £10,000. they also – one of the things that they talked about here was that once again, it was getting back to that standard deviation. They were saying a fast – they have these things that are they're fast-rising screens in the bank outlet that they will protect the teller from whatever's happening. They just, like, they hit a button, and it's like these air-powered shoots up into the air thing.
Yeah.
And so what they're saying is that – so you had this average of £24,000. It will actually drop to, like – they will actually robbers will actually leave money there to try to not get caught, to the point where, like, you can lose money in the venture if they have one of these glass things. And so,
oh, jeez.
Yeah, it was pretty funny. But I love it, you know? That's science, that's tech, that's it's economics. So they were just like, yeah, pretty much they did answer their questions. They're like, if you put it in these screens, you're going to be fine. They actually will lose money. Yeah, it says a screen has actually resulted in Raiders handing over 4,000 pounds of their own money to the bank cashiers before fleeing the premises. Which I'm like, you guys are robbing players with like $4,000 on hand? I don't
right. Okay, I don't understand that.
Cool.
Already.
Yeah, yeah. And then they were saying that to answer the actual banker's question, they were saying it's worth noting that the criminals themselves seem to have figured this out, being that bank robberies have actually gone way down over time. And their final conclusion is the lesson of which would seem to be successful criminals study econometrics and statistics can help in all walks of life. Or as I like to say, data is your friend.
Right. Man. Yeah, that's really funny. That's really funny. Just goes to show, crooks are stupid.
Yeah, so not necessarily tech related, but just awesome in general.
Well, it's big data related. It's just
big data. There you go.
One of our bell horns. You know, it's
thank you.
Anytime you can look at data and you can draw those kind of conclusions. That's interesting. I mean, you know, kind of shoots a hole in Michael Crichton's. You know, people say crime doesn't pay, but obviously it does. It pays really, really well. But I think it's just one of those, yeah, I think banks are to the point where they've gotten sophisticated enough where they go, yeah, we're gonna lose a certain amount of money, but if it doesn't, yeah. I've always been under the impression that you know, that people aren't coming away with millions of dollars out of a bank. And even if you are, like my kind of fatalistic realization that even if I'm making a poor engineer salary, I'm going to make, you know, many, you know, I'm going to make multiples of $1 million over the course of my lifetime, my working career, which means that, like, even if I could steal $1.5 million, it's not like I'm set for the rest of my life. I'm still going to need a job at some point, which is just, like, you know, kind of depressing. And
yeah,
that's not even a good life. That's just I'm going to be able to eke by, you know, and so I've always just assumed that it's like, you know, people rob banks in a moment of desperation, which is unfortunate because they're just trying to get through that 1 month. I don't – all those movies that try to make it as though it's a lifestyle that, you know, that you can choose as long as you don't get caught. Yeah, no, it just doesn't work that way.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. That's cool. That's funny.
Yeah. Thought you'd appreciate that.
Yeah. One of the things that I read this week and obviously, Apple was the talk of the town. So we'll get back into the tech stuff. I thought this was fascinating. Is that they have like the? I guess they have these tools that you can measure the tilt of screens.
There's an app for that, right?
Yeah, and I guess Apple uses them all the time, so that they can so that in the stores they can set all of their screens to a precise 70 degrees. And the reason why they picked 70 degrees for all of their screens is because I guess it turns out it's like the guaranteed terrible angle. Like, it doesn't work for anybody. The reason why that's important is because it means that anybody who walks up to one of their computers has to reach out and tilt the screen and touch the computer and feel it and feel the hinge and feel the aluminum and go, oh man, that's kind of nice. Pick up the laptop. And I guess one of the things that they're saying is, like, you know, one of Steve Jobs' is, you know, he talked about this when they first introduced the ideas of the stores, but it really is an undercurrent of the Apple Store, but it's this, the ownership of the Apple Store, that you go in and you feel like you own these things. You know, the idea of putting all these apps on there for you to play with, putting websites on there, letting people do whatever the heck they want in the Apple Store. You know, like, they have those videos of dudes ordering pizza and bringing it into the Apple Store, you know, having it delivered to the Apple Store and eating pizza in the Apple Store and nobody saying a word about it, because it's like, no, man, this isn't our store. This is your store.
Okay. All right. All right.
Just kind of that, you know, kind of that cool relationship that makes the Apple Store is a unique experience. And I wanted to bring this up for two reasons. Number one, I thought it was just funny that they picked the worst possible angle.
So but the other thing. So I'm gonna hold. Remember that other thing thought, okay? Because I'm gonna derail you with a funny story related to that.
Go for it.
I read a book. I think it was called "Why We Buy," by I feel like it was like Pablo something. So this guy would study purchasing behavior, and I was reading it while in college just for fun because I was weird like that, and I was also helping out. I was one of the clubs I was part of was doing a fundraiser where they were selling ornaments for Christmas time, and yeah. Like in the mess hall area. And one of the things that he talked about was like, if people touch a product, they are significantly more likely to buy it. I mean, and it was something like it went from, you know, just significant, right? I don't know the exact numbers. I can make one up, but it was significant. And I was reading that, and, you know, where they're selling these ornaments, and I was talking to this guy, and I was like, yeah, apparently all they got to do is touch it, and they'll buy it. You know, that's the way it works. And he was just like, no, that's not true. Can't be true, whatever. And I'm like, no, that's what I heard. So there's this girl who walks up, and she's talking to someone else about and, you know, we're like, hey, I want to buy an ornament. She's like, no, I'm good. Thanks. I have way too many ornaments already. And then she starts talking to another lady who's with us just, you know, about school and life and whatever. And, I mean, she's not there to buy ornaments anymore, right? And so yeah. This guy who's like, whatever, he literally grabs an ornament, walks over, puts it in her hand, says nothing, and goes back and sits down. Okay?
Yeah.
She's talking to her. She's got it in her hand, whatever. She's looking at it. She goes, huh. Yeah, I'll take this one. I'll take this other one, too. And he's just like, what? No way. Awesome. Oh, yeah. He was like, that's amazing. How did you know that? I was like, it's in the book. So I see this, and I'm like, dude, they want you to touch the computer. It will literally increase your chances of you wanting to buy it.
I have to be Apple's worst nightmare because I walk into the Apple Store like literally at least once a month, if not two or three times a month, and I have not bought something from an Apple Store yet. You know, just like, that's okay. Like I'm one of those strange breeds, but I get it. You know, I get that. Like I've had enough friends where, yeah, you know, they can't even go window shopping because it triggers something. I need to buy it. And yeah, that makes sense. And it's like, that's really crazy powerful. That sense of like, yeah, putting it in people's hands, letting them use it, letting them play around with it. You know, yeah, and forcing you to touch it more importantly. Man, those guys are pretty clever. Speaking of companies that are clever, so we shouldn't talk about what Microsoft does in their store. Boom! Which brings me to the next topic of a part of my story about checking out the Lumia 9000 that I didn't mention, which Lumia? Was I walked into the store.
Right. What? Yeah. I was just making sure you said it right.
Thank you. When I walked into the store, I walked over and I'm playing with the phones, right? And I went to Google my website, and I finally did figure out how to actually put in my URL. And on their phones, I couldn't reach my websites. The websites were blocked.
Huh.
I actually had to use one of the employees' Lumia 9000s, where his personal phone. You know, nice of him to let.
Oh,
me
so they it. Actually within the store were blocking URLs.
Yeah.
Weird.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I mean, Apple. We can say Apple has like
that would
free...
be that would take more effort to do that.
I think it's one of those things where they want to control the experience, and they don't want websites getting through that may not work on their browser. Surprise, surprise. Because there's a lot. Whereas in Apple, you know, in the Apple Store, basically every website works on theirs.
You should give someone full disclosure on that kind of stuff. Check the websites you visit. Make sure they work. All right.
Yeah, and what they might block it. They might just straight up block it.
Wait a second. So you're saying, all right, is it the device that would block it, or their in-store internet? They'd have some sort of filter on it that was blocking it.
Their in-store internet that was running their device.
Yeah, that's weird, huh?
Yeah, it is really weird. It's really frustrating, you know, especially considering the fact that, you know, Apple's crazy success with having you play with the device and being able to surf the internet and do whatever you want. Like, you know, and it's just...
So there is one thing you'll like this transition that Microsoft is doing to copy Apple.
Oh yeah.
And it's happening this Monday. It's some sort of
tomorrow.
Yeah, tomorrow. It's some sort of secret announcement event thing. It was like literally earlier or wait, what later last week? What day was it?
It's Tuesday.
It was a Tuesday.
It was the day after the keynote.
They sent out invites to not us, to go to what was it, Los Angeles. I'm just gonna let you pretty much tell the story. To Los Angeles. But that was the details. It's a Microsoft event in Los Angeles, Monday. See you there. And they were like, later on, we will tell you the exact location and the exact time. And then when you get there, you'll actually know what it is. Yeah. And, you know, everyone was like, well, what the heck is this? What's going on? You know, and it worked. It did exactly what they wanted, right? Tons of buzz. Everyone's like, we got some random invite. Don't know what's going on. Time to get the dogs out, start snooping around. And they did. And so far, the prevailing theory is that Microsoft is going to do their own little tablet thing. They're going to get into the tablet business, and they're going to eschew large, vulnerable, awesome companies like HP and make their own. And
Sounds like a terrible idea.
Well, I don't know. They did it with the Xbox, pretty successful. Of course, they also did it with the Zune, and that was less successful.
It's not the fact that they're getting into hardware. It's that they're getting into hardware competing directly against, you know, HP and Dell.
Oh,
they're
going to
hurt HP and Dell.
Well, that's definitely part of the question, right? And that was the whole thing about Google buying Motorola with their Android devices.
I still think that's an awful idea, and that's going to hurt them long term. You know.
Well, way to be open about it.
Well, the problem is
I'm kidding.
The problem is simple. It's that every Motorola device from here on out is actually going to have the latest version of the operating software, and not just the latest version, but it's going to have all the ins and outs and, you know, the all the really cool stuff. It's going to perform better. Now, it's going to help sell Android phones. It's going to help sell Razors, but the advantage of Google that Google has right now against Apple is that they've got, you know, 17 different suppliers building phones, and Samsung's suddenly going to be just like wrung out to dry, and they're going to have to ask the question, you know, why should I compete against you when you're like cheating me out of, you know, if this episode, I know we might already have a title for the episode, but the King's Table thing is a great example of this right now at the click wheel table of Google's, you know, Android. There are a bunch of suppliers, and the theory is that they're going to, you know, why did King Arthur have a round table? So that nobody got to sit at the ends. Everybody was on an equal playing field. Google is now making it a long, narrow table with them at one end and Motorola at the other end, and everybody else along the thing is just going to get, you know, second seat. When are they going to get frustrated and just, you know, jump ship because they don't, you know, because they want to figure out something they're getting? Mm-hmm. They're losing money, and I think the beauty of what's that called? Windows. I think the beauty of Windows for the last two decades has been that, you know, Microsoft doesn't give anybody any real advantage. It's just, you know, whatever hardware is cheapest, whoever's got the best customer service, whoever's got the best package right now, that's the advantage. And as soon as you start packaging your own stuff, you start giving yourself a, you know, you even though you're going to pitch it as, we're just showing the other companies what they could do, what you're going to do is you're going to start selling more. And eventually people are going to look at how much money you're making off of this product line, and, you know, within the company, and they're going to say, well, we can't let HP dig into that. You know, it's like what Google's dealing with right now with Amazon, where Amazon is starting to eat too much of the pie, and it's bugging Google, you know, and they're like, they're going to have to compete against their own system, you know, and they start to, when you get into that sort of stuff and it starts to become a thing and you get too, you don't stay above it, you get down into the fray, I think it really ends up fracturing. Now, The nice part about where we're at is we have no idea what they're actually talking about, so it's entirely possible that that entire, you know, thing is something that Microsoft would go, yeah, we totally agree, which is why we're not doing that.
Which is why we're pulling out HP and Dell and Lenovo with us to show off our new pads. Right.
Well, it's, and it, what's really, you know, one of the things that kills me is that it's like, you know, the MacBook, the 15-inch MacBook with Retina display, yeah, we all kind of knew that was coming. We knew that that was where the direction they were going. And the radio or the podcast you're listening to right now called that a couple months ago, 6 months ago. But the fact was he got done describing this thing and then said, oh, yeah, and by the way, we're almost sold out, so you better start ordering, like, right now, you know, because it was available that moment. And so my theory is that they're going to try to generate all this buzz, try to cut into whatever Apple's doing with some new piece of hardware that's not going to come out for another 6 months.
We'll see.
You know, you just sit there and you go, like, yeah, but it you know, that's what my thought is if it's a tablet. I'm hoping it's not a tablet. I'm hoping it's something else that's really cool. They're just like, hey, we got this new piece of technology. We're innovating like crazy, and we hope you guys are excited about it. So this is what we're talking about. You know, maybe it's some heads-up display or some satellite.
That would be cool. That would be cool. I do know that never mind. Can't say it. HP. This is tough. I don't think it's public.
I don't think don't do it. Well, okay. Tell me this. You can tell me after the show.
Sure.
Then I don't mind if we don't tell anybody. Yeah, just type it in the chat window. We'll really drive everybody nuts.
No. No. It's related to my perceived opinion of HP's opinion of Windows 8. Coming from the guy in charge of all of HP PCs.
That's probably more than enough. I'm starting to guess, which is probably more than what we should be letting people know.
Which probably isn't a super surprise. Anyways, let's move on before I really get myself into trouble, because I do actually like my job.
Let's hope that tomorrow goes awesome, because this week was not a great week for Microsoft. Let's be honest. Nokia cut 10K jobs, and their crediting rate was basically brought down to junk. Nokia is in full implosion mode, and it appears that the question that all the economists are asking right now isn't if they will completely collapse, but if they'll do it before or after RIM.
Wow.
I guess one of the big statistics that people have been throwing around is that since 2007, so the day before the iPhone was announced, they've lost 92% of their value in their stock in the last 5 years. Yeah. When you like, holy cow, it's not
That's
good.
Pretty bad.
Yeah, and basically they said that, you know, it's I guess I had totally forgotten about this quote, but the new CEO got brought on a couple of years ago, 2 years ago, and one of the things that he said when he got brought on was he had this big meeting, talked to the company. He said, look, we're on an oil platform in the middle of the ocean. The oil platform's burning, you know, talking specifically about Symbian. And he said, you know, we can do one of two things. We can either stay on the platform or we can jump in the water. Now, obviously, jumping in the water is really dangerous. We could drown. We could die. But if we stay on the platform, we're definitely going to burn to death. So this is what we're going to do. We're going to abandon the platform. Mm-hmm. And not just hypothetically, but literally. And the problem is that they jumped in the water and they're trying to swim to Microsoft's platform. And they're still drowning. You know, it was a... He admitted openly, and I think predicted accurately, the fact that, you know, Nokia had a really, really, really tall order. It wasn't just a couple shifts and changes. It was, we need a completely new strategy. We need to go in headlong and not pull back. And it still could not work out, and it's not working out.
They just need to hold on long enough for Windows 8 to be released. so that they can take advantage of that whole Halo effect, which it may not be awesome. From everything I've read, Windows 8 is not the easiest thing to learn how to use, but you can eventually learn it. And, you know, once people are used to it, then they'll be fine. But
Well, I think the problem, I think one of the big issues is that Microsoft really was hoping that the smartphones would take off so that people were familiar with the Windows Mobile before they got Windows 8 in their hands, so that that helped kind of transition them. They didn't want it to be Microsoft, or they didn't want Windows 8 to be the transition piece they wanted.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that this is just going to – this is turning into a mess. It's turning into – you know, and it's like one of those big questions. People have thrown up the idea, well, they could just buy Nokia if it gets cheap enough, or they could just buy RIM if it gets cheap enough. But you sit there and go, like, so Microsoft has to take on these enormous companies, and not just enormous and, like, expensive, but tons of employees, huge amounts of real estate, just physical buildings and plants and all sorts of stuff. You know, of these failing companies. So not only do they have to, you know, not only would they have to absorb it and do all that on their own, but they'd also have to fix whatever problem was going on. And the question is, is it just a, you just change a little bit of this, change a little bit of that, and then we'll get it working? Or is this just a tailspin? Are they in a tailspin right now, and there's really nothing you can do except, you know, part it out once it crashes?
I don't know.
Save as much of the wreckage as you can. And I think that's what kind of everybody is. The problem is it's like Nokia seems to be, it was so much bigger than RIM. It was, you know, it's hard to think of, you know, RIM has been the fun one to kind of take on because they got hit so hard in the face by the iPhone. And Nokia kind of held this position of, no, we got this. We're not going to. Because we still have a position in the market, and they were so big worldwide, they were so big within their country. They're tied into so many things, and so their collapse is that much more stunning than RIM's, because it's just like, what happened? Where did you guys go? I think it could be nasty, and I think what's going to happen is right when it starts to get ugly, Microsoft is going to start getting real, real friendly with Samsung. I'm still kind of pitching on this, you know, HTC and Samsung. They're going to say, look, we're not going to make a phone. We're not going to buy a phone company. We're looking for a partner who's willing to do the hardware for us. And HTC and Samsung are going to say, well, we're going to stick with the Google phones, but yeah, we'll make a couple Windows phones too. And until it makes sense for us to switch, and I think Google is going to make it make sense for them. You know, but that's what I think.
Okay. Good thoughts. I'll tell you what. I'll do one more, and then you can share your one more.
Okay.
And this will be my relatively fast. Google Plus, unfortunately, is losing some key partners. PopCap and Wooga, I think that's how you pronounce it. They're two of the largest social game developers on Google Plus. They are pulling their games from the social network. Did you even know that Google Plus had games?
Let's start. I had no idea. I was like, this is part of the problem, I think.
So I play a game by Digital Chocolate on Facebook all the time called Millionaire City. It's horribly stupid, but I'm totally addicted to it. Just the way it is. Because I can play it for like 15 minutes every day and call it good, which I like, unlike you can't do that with Farmville stuff. It's not allowed. So I went and tried to, they had that version of it on Google Plus. And I was like, oh, cool. You know, if I can play on Google Plus, I'm all over it. Nope, you have to start a whole new account. It doesn't transfer over. I was like, well, that's lame. I guess I'm sticking with Facebook. And I tried. They had another like zombies game where you had like go around killing zombies, and which was fun for a while. And then you just kind of go, yeah, all right, I'm just killing zombies. And they do the whole like they limit your number of like times you can like you know, swing your shovel to kill a zombie, and then you gotta wait, you know, 20 minutes or an hour or whatever. I was like, yeah. I don't, why? Why are you stopping me from playing? Just literally so I'll come back later? Come on. Just, or do they want me to buy, right? They're like, oh, spend money and you can keep killing zombies. Yeah,
that's so obnoxious.
Just like, the threshold's a little low. That's all I'm saying. You know, let me play, let me at least play for like an hour before you start charging me money. You know, don't hit me in the first 20 minutes. That's, anyways, apparently, these guys are pulling some of their games. Basically, what they're saying is that they're going to redeploy the resources to other, you know, versions of it and adaptations of it. You know, they're saying, you know, Google is a, you know, it's a valuable gaming partner for PopCap and EA, was one example. And they go, and we'll continue to develop for Google platforms, which, you know, aka Android. But apparently Google Plus is not quite the gaming platform that Facebook is.
Yeah, big surprise. Well, Google Plus isn't anything that Facebook is. I mean, it's just,
you know, and if you got, and if you have to make choices on where you're going to deploy resources and make games, you know, I obviously, you know, if they don't have the monthly active users, why would you spend your time there? Mm-hmm. You know, makes sense, I guess.
Yeah, so that's far from shocking. It's unfortunate for Google, but it's a, you know, it's kind of, it's inevitable, I think, in the direction they're going.
Yeah.
Eventually, I think it turns around. I
feel like with Google Plus, it's like they take a step forward, take a step back, take a step forward, take a step back, and you're just like, come on, guys, either, I don't know, it's weird. I can't decide. There's some days I love it. I think the huddles are amazing, as, you know, we're using it here. But then you hear stuff like this, you're like, what are you guys doing? You know, or I mean, it's not them, but
the problem is it's not a social network. It's a what am I looking for? It's a hub.
I don't know.
And when it's treated like a hub of their technology, it's great. And when it's treated like a social network, it doesn't work at all. You know, and you know, and I think what they need to do is, you know, obviously one of their technologies supporting games wasn't working because it relied too much on the social network of it. But if you were to act like this is a hub of all of our gaming stuff, people will use it, which in some degrees I'm sure it is. Because, you know, I'm sure that's where it's going. I don't think it's a huge deal. I think it just is more proof that people don't use Google Plus like a social network. Shocker.
Fair enough. Know? All right.
Last big thing I kind of wanted to talk about, people, you know, people have gotten the dev build, the developer's build of iOS 6. They're actually getting to play around with the new tool, get to see what it's like, see what it works. And one of the big things everybody said is, hey, where'd my podcasts go? Podcasts don't work on it anymore. They said, like, what the heck? Where are we supposed to go for our podcast? It's not on iTunes anymore, which everyone is pretty much saying, which everybody agrees. What it means is that they will release probably during the actual announcement in September of the new hardware. They'll release a new podcast app, a separate app, kind of like iBooks or videos or, you know, all of these things that are under the same umbrella on your PC or Mac, they get broken out into their own little separate categories on the actual iOS, and they think that's what's going to happen for the podcast. So everybody get excited.
Why is that? I like having the big apps that kind of have it all. I mean, well, assuming they do it right on like Facebook. But, you know, I like that when you had your movies, you had your music, you had your podcast, it was all in one app. You know, it was like my media app.
I think it's because this is my thought. Each one requires a different set of what's the word I'm looking for?
I don't know.
Management tools.
Okay.
You know, they each one does different things, and so it's like you have to build that into each one. And I think what they end up doing is they end up building literally entirely. Yeah, there's one button, and then you press the button, and then it's like there's eight apps within the one app, and they just sit there and they go, "Why don't we just break it out into other apps?" You know, I think that's what it becomes. You know, and I personally like it. You know, I get all excited about the fact that Facebook has their their app that has their iMessenger, and they got the main Facebook, and they got the pictures, and they got, you know, I like that. I prefer that sort of an app system. So, and I like the fact that, you know, podcasts, man, we get to, we're going to get our own little app. We're
going to
keep saying that. We got our own app. This is awesome. Thanks, Apple.
Love you guys. Maybe they'll call us up so we can talk about it.
Oh, my gosh. Hey, you know what?
You know somebody. You know somebody. Make it happen.
I actually randomly ran into him today, too. And
make it happen, dude. I'm tasking you right here, right now.
Okay. That's
in September. Happening. In September, man. I want to be there.
that would be pretty.
So we're the Frilla Bros Tech Podcast.
Yeah. Hey guys, we love Apple, and you know,
we talk about them on our podcast. Now you can listen to us talk about them on their podcast. It's kind of meta, I know, but awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Jay's out. So, and yep. Nintendo, please don't sue us.
Yes. P.S.
We like you guys too.
Forgot Yay. About that. We use awesome.
Yes.
Very cool. All right, man. So, anything else going on in your life real quick before we...
I'm not living at home right now, so
that's,
for a couple
that's
weeks,
something
so
happening.
That's the long and short of my exciting stuff.
That's cool. I have overcome electrical... How do I want to say this? I've had electricity problems in my household for like the last week. Yeah. Did I mention that? I mentioned putting together a trailer. I forget what I mentioned. I don't remember things that far long ago. Anyways, so I solved all of my electrical problems this week.
Boom.
Yeah, I haven't quite finished them, but I solved them. Does that make
nice.
Sense? You know, it's
yes.
like, yeah.
You figured out what needs to be done, now you just need to do it.
Yeah, and I have all the materials, now it's just literally hunkering down and getting it done. So that feels
awesome.
That feels really good to have mastered electricity in this particular case. So that felt good. Cool. Well, everybody, thank you for joining us. I am James Furlow, and my brother is Matthew Furlow. And we will talk next time. King's Tech Table, another terrible analogies. Done. Love it. Perfect. There it is. Look out for the King's Tech Table and other terrible analogies.
Nice.
Yep. So, it's all right.